This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A few weeks ago, an op-ed in the Rutland Herald Times Argus made a big splash in educational communities around the state. Longtime teacher Charles Laramie said he's quitting the profession, and the reason he points to is a breakdown in respect, civility, and a lack of consequences for bad behavior. Laramie claims these factors are driving teachers out in increasing numbers. If I used the language students freely use today in the hallways and classrooms of our schools, Laramie wrote, I would be fired before the day was out, and rightly so. And yet students today are rarely, if ever, spoken to. Today, students really do rule the school. Well, that article got a lot of feedback, and it sparked a conversation that we thought would be worth having on Vermont Edition. Many school administrators reacted with anger to Laramie's article, defending the students they teach and saying, if you want to know why students might be struggling, we need to look at our larger society and give the students more support in the ways their lives are challenging. So we're joined today by two school administrators, and we'll also hear from two students. Jerry Castles is the director of guidance at Northfield Middle and High School. He's been in the job for 25 years, working with grades 6 through 9. Jerry, it's nice to talk with you.
Thanks, Jane.
And Elijah Hawks is co-principal at Randolph Union Middle and High Schools. Principal Hawks, nice to talk with you.
Thanks for reaching out to Randolph Union.
Do you go by Principal Hawks in your school? Is that what the students would call you?
Mr. Hawks.
Mr. Hawks, got it. So let's talk a little bit. I know not all of our listeners will have read this article that Charles Laramie wrote, but it really was a little bit explosive, I think, in some parental communities, local communities of parents, and also among educators. My understanding is it got sort of passed around. It was one of those at least small-scale viral articles and sparked a lot of different kinds of responses. Elijah, what did you think of it?
Well, it reminded me, Jane, of some work that the faculty at Randolph Union did at the very end of last year. When I read the article, I guess my response or thinking was, okay, I feel you. What are we going to do about it? And it reminded me of there was a three-hour meeting or process that two of our teacher leaders engaged us in last year, the very last day of school before summer vacation was to start. And we focused in on what we call our habits of heart and our habits of work, respect for yourself, respect for others, your ability to be productive, your ability to be organized, those expectations of students. And the adults in the room were effectively circling the wagons and saying, one thing that was noticed, our guidance counselor looked around the room and noticed that given retirements in recent years and the transitioning of one generation of educators into another, she said, I've been here for about 10 years, and it looks like about 75% of you are new in that time. So that's the right time for a community of adults to get together and say, what are our common expectations going to be for the young people in our charge every day? And we spent some time doing that and recommitted to being more of a presence in the hallways, developing some common language for how to address students who say or do something that is unexpected or unacceptable.
Is that happening a lot? I mean, is vulgar language on the increase among students and in the classroom?
Well, I would say we're addressing it to a degree right now, but I think that students are living more in realms of interaction where there is not adult mentorship and where there is little civil discourse. And those realms are online interactions. School itself can be kind of like a setup in that regard. You know, you put 400 young people in one building and about 50 adults, you know, you're going to have interactions that sometimes may be driven by adolescent energy and angst and anger.
Which has always been true, right? I mean, that's always been the school environment.
Which has always been true. But I think there is a lack of modeling in the adult culture in our country these days where civil discourse is not always the norm. And again, with the internet and our handheld devices, young people can enter into that world in ways that we as adults and parents can't always supervise. And so they're going to learn new norms that way, which brings us back to what are our norms, not just for the hallways, what are our norms in the classroom? What are our deeper expectations for the interactions we have when we're talking about and doing things that really matter? That is the curriculum and the work of the school day in, day out.
Jerry Castles, what about for you? Do you see this breakdown in civility, an increase in vulgar language, and an inability for teachers to be able to control that kind of behavior in the classroom?
Well, the article was passed to me. I did read it, and I did some head nodding, thinking, yes, I've experienced that. I've seen that. Jane, I think what it comes back to me thinking about it a lot is that many of our students are stressed considerably based on situations outside of school and a lot of social media that's really hard for kids to manage, and that does come into our school setting. Our particular school at Northfield, I think we've worked hard with an approach in different ways. Major part of our approach is we're involved in a program, a lot of Vermont schools are, PBIS, Positive Behavioral Intervention and Supports. So it's really focusing hard to recognize all of the good things that students are doing and be explicit to reinforce that with kids. We're also a trauma-informed school, which we've gone through a lot of training this year of having that lens. We understand some kids have had traumatic experiences and how to kind of quickly, not necessarily assess, but understand that this might be a factor and then reacting appropriately.
When you talk about trauma, a trauma-informed or trauma-aware school, what kinds of traumas are your students experiencing that then you need to be addressing or dealing with in a school setting?
I think a lot of them are very difficult family situations, single parents working multiple jobs, a lot of unstructured time, a lot of social media kind of hours and hours on social media, and also other things that relate to, you know, community problems that Vermont's struggling with like every other state. So it's really important for our teachers to have that lens, and we have a motto. It's connect before you try to correct anyone. So build that connection and not personalize things because it could be trauma-based or just chronic stress of kids. And in my 25 years, I've definitely seen one thing that sticks out is kids coming into our building who have a higher level of stress.
So kids coming into the building with a higher level of stress than previous generations. You both have talked about social media, but why are kids more stressed? I mean, there's always been poverty. There have always been difficult family situations. We haven't always had social media, but there's always been, bullying. There have been different kinds of social interactions that have been difficult. So, Jerry, why are more kids more stressed now?
I think it's a combination of factors, Jane. One is a lot of pressure on lower-income families, a lot of single parents parenting and working multiple jobs. Social media is really difficult for all of us to handle, and especially on kids developmentally, the effect is you can post something and get instant likes and gratification, and, I mean, all of the studies are showing how we interact differently online and a lot less caring and empathy compared to in-person interactions.
Elijah, what do you think?
Well, in preparation for the show, I asked some colleagues what their thoughts were on that. And our student assistance provider, who has some specialty in substance abuse and the effect that has on young people, he wrote to me that in terms of changes that the young people may be facing, he says he sees constant war. We've been a nation at war for 1 to 2 decades now, and that's affecting our families. There's constant media coverage of a very real drug epidemic. We had a young person in our school came to school on Monday. His brother had just overdosed and died. This is real. This affects how kids think and behave in their schools. And it wasn't happening when I was growing up in Vermont 30 years ago. he also notes a very uncertain political environment, many of families affected by this, an economy that's been in turmoil where for decades, where the cost of living hasn't kept up with what you're earning. I don't know if I quite said that right. But we also have those statistics that demographers are pointing out about white American life expectancy in decline, and especially in communities that are struggling due to poisonings and overdoses, due to suicides and depression, alcoholism, and other things that kill us more slowly. This is new. So that's new as well. The economy continues to struggle. We're a nation at war, and that affects our families and our veterans who also commit suicide at higher rates than the general population.
So how does that manifest itself? What behaviors do you then see in students that you sort of attribute to those stresses?
Well, when young people come from worlds of high stress or trauma, they haven't had the same foundation of basic trust built for them. They haven't had the consistency of their needs being met. They may not have had a loss adequately acknowledged. Their community may be disrupted by different factors, whether that's racism or poverty. And so when young people don't have that sense of basic trust that their needs are going to be met by the adults and caregivers in their world, they have less resilience for the day-to-day obstacles that appear. whether that's how another friend looks at you in the hallway or whether that's a teacher and how the teacher's particular tone when they might correct your behavior. When we don't have that sense of basic trust in the world and that we are good and worthy of care, then we don't have the resilience to deal with day-to-day obstacles, and we're more likely to, quote-unquote, act out.
So that's what you see, more tears, more anger, more acting out, not listening, because it's coming from this place of either fear or loss of self-confidence or sadness and anger.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, is that the types of behaviors you see, too?
That was an excellent description. I think, Jane, also a lot of conflict that's coming into the school that starts online, and inappropriate language in the school that's appears to be very appropriate online and is promoted through the media. So kids, some of them bring in these language skills and talk in that way, and we're always trying through our programs to redirect them, connect with them, and give them the support they need.
We're talking about students, but let's actually hear from one, because, you know, part of this is a conversation that that peer groups are having in schools, and students are dealing with this. On the line with us now is Bella Wozniak, a seventh grader at Northfield Middle School. Hi, Bella. Thank you so much for being willing to be on the program today.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to this conversation with Jerry Castles and Elijah Hawks, and I'm curious, do you see your fellow students acting out or having behavior in the ways that that's been described?
Yeah, I do. Like I know some kids have, like Jerry said, problems with family members and maybe single parents, and it's just, it makes them want to act out and get attention.
Does that make it a difficult place to learn for you?
I think it does sometimes, but I try to block it out a lot. But, I mean, again, those kids are just trying to get attention, and it's kind of tough to learn with them.
You know, we've talked a little bit about social media, and you're a seventh grader. But I imagine you already have some sense of what's happening online. You might be online on some sites yourself. I don't know if you use Snapchat or Instagram or something else. But how do you think that plays a role in the kinds of conversations that happen in school that might start online?
Well, I know most kids at my school have, like, Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. And there's just, like, all of these ways that you can get to someone and talk to really almost anyone. And it's kind of a big problem. Like, I know a few of my friends have been bullied on Snapchat and Instagram, and there's really not many ways that you can find out, because you can just delete things.
How does that make you feel and make your friends feel?
That makes us feel a little not safe and not protected by teachers and parents, because they can't really do much about the social media apps, and it's a little scary.
Yeah. So what do you think should be done about that?
Well, I don't know, because I know a whole, like, almost everyone in my school has all these social media apps, and they'd hate if anyone were to take them away.
Yeah.
So there's just really not much we can do. Just if anything does happen, just try and find out who's doing these mean things.
We got a note from a listener who says, named Anja, who says, I'm listening and hearing that social media is causing real problems. Why do we allow phones in the schools at all? Why can't there be rules that all phones are off until the end of the school day? Bella, are the social media issues happening at school, or are these things that happen when you're home and then they sort of filter into school in your interactions with actual students?
Well, I think it's kind of both during the day and after at home, because you just want to go home and lie on the couch and be on your phone or iPad. And actually, about 2 weeks ago, they banned phones in the school. You have to keep them in your bag or just in your locker. And so actually, I've seen a change. Not many people getting being mean on social media. But then again, you can't really take it away from them when they're at home. So,
mm-hmm. You know, it seems like it's always been true that each older generation says, oh, the kids these days are terrible. They don't dress right. They don't talk right. They're using terrible language. They have no respect for their elders. And every generation says that. I would like to know what you want to say to the adults, you know, who you're watching, who are your supposed to be your role models. What do you think adults are doing? And how do you think about adult generations?
Well, I mean, for us as kids, sometimes swearing just a little bit, it's kind of normal for us. Now we're on little kids or adults, but that's kind of like a thing that we do sometimes. But, like, well, I guess parents seem sometimes a little strict about these things. As, I feel like as long as we're not doing these things in front of little children and adults, it's kind of okay with me.
Hmm. Do you think teachers and parents understand what you and your friends are experiencing?
Well, I think on some level, parents and teachers understand what we're experiencing because, I mean, they were kids once. But, like, everything's changing, and we're getting all these new things. And my parents didn't have social media or even computers when they were younger. So I guess I imagine it's kind of hard for them to understand.
Bella, I really appreciate you being on the show today and talking a little bit about what this is like from your perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Bella Wozniak, a seventh grader at Northfield Middle School. Today we're talking about student behavior and respect in our schools. Lots of perspectives on this. Amy says this is not just an issue in middle and high school. Being proactive in early childhood and in elementary grades could lay a stronger foundation for dealing with these challenges. We are definitely seeing and dealing with this in preschool and kindergarten. Tom says, in part, my significant other quit teaching several years ago for multiple reasons, but chief among those was the lack of accountability for the students for their actions, or the lack thereof. It failed the student by not allowing them to learn the lessons that came with failure. Mark says, how can an individual school or school district be expected to address or solve problems that are endemic statewide, like generational poverty or opiate abuse by parents of school-aged children? These are issues better addressed outside the school system, where the root causes of the problems that hamstring these students can be dealt with. If tax money has to be spent, better it be spent to solve the actual problem than to apply Band-Aid after Band-Aid that does nothing more than plug the leaking dam with your finger. Our guests here in the studio with me are Jerry Castles, Director of Guidance at Northfield Middle and High School, and Elijah Hawks, a co-principal at Randolph Union Middle and High Schools. And if you'd like to share your perspective, you can do so on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 800-639-2211. Let's get one more call in here, and then I'll come to Jerry and Elijah again. Shanti is calling in from Montreal. Hi, Shanti. Go right ahead.
Hi. So I'm a recent university grad, and I work with young children, like under the age of 5. And I absolutely see what's going on in this conversation as a problem. And I think it's really important to look at the bigger issues. I think one of your comments on your VPR page kind of addressed this. How can one school district be able to solve endemic problems? Because when you look at generational poverty, for example, that's directly linked to the way in which our economy is moving and the way in which the middle class is shrinking. Or if you look at issues with opiate abuse, those things, well, what I mean to say is that, because I could go on and on, but what I mean to say is that the problem here is that social media is a big problem in that human beings, I don't think we're meant to process so much information on such a grand scale, especially so much suffering, but also in our like global players, the public figures who create examples for our society aren't really holding up their end of the bargain. And when grown-ups aren't around and grown-ups are the ones who are also interested in social media and who are also checked out, then we have an issue where there isn't enough role models and there isn't enough like engaged parenting and engaged child raising. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Shanti, I really appreciate your perspective. Thank you very much for calling in. Elaine is on the line with us in Winooski. Hi, Elaine. Go right ahead. What's your perspective?
Yes, I'm calling in because I'm a retired teacher of 34 years, and though I taught on the elementary level, I did teach, and I felt it was the responsibility for teachers to teach good manners, and that certain that the way they talked at home was not the way they could talk in public out with a group. And I think that the swearing and the racial statements and things are not acceptable in the workplace. Since I've retired, I have worked in a manufacturing setting, and the company had to tell the employees that, you know, racial slurs, T-shirts with, you know, questionable or offensive words, and that swearing was not appropriate in a public workplace. And I just feel that, you know, we're not preparing our kids unless we say, you know, this is the way you behave at school, because we're preparing you for the work world. And the way you behave at home is the way you behave at home. And I don't feel that I feel even traumatized children can make the distinction between the two places. But I'm concerned about the workforce that we're now raising.
Yeah, Elaine, I hear what you're saying, and, you know, interesting, too, to note what you say, that this is happening in the workplace, too, with adults having to be told, you know, this is not appropriate, and whether we attribute that to schooling that's not working for them or a larger societal issue with civility is a matter of perspective. Jerry Castles, what are you thinking as you hear these comments?
I think they're great comments. And one of the ideas we have at our school we're putting a lot of energy into is this concept of resiliency. More than just a Band-Aid, it's more fundamental thinking about challenges and difficulties in everyone's lives, not only how you can overcome them, but how you can actually benefit from them and become more resilient. So we're showing a film for parents next week on that. We're hoping to draw a lot of attention and working directly with our students on their stories and skills around resiliency.
Elijah, I want to come to you, but Jerry, when you say resiliency, I mean, that's a buzzword. But so in terms of what actually happens in a classroom, what is a resilient student going to look like? How is that different than a student who doesn't have those skills?
Well, one thing, Jane, that we're fascinated with is who has the skills and can they really actually be developed? So I actually teach a seventh grade class called 21st Century Skills. Shout out to you guys. I told you I'd do it. And we're studying right now resiliency, and we have a guest speaker actually coming in today who is a student in our school who had a very difficult accident in their life, completely overcame it, changed this young person's life, and she's becoming a nurse because of it. So it's the idea of handling, looking at challenges, realizing what kind of effect they have, your choices, and then reflecting back and see how you actually can benefit from challenge and difficulty.
Elijah Hawks?
Well, Jan, I hope you'll cut me off if you need to get to the other student caller.
Yes, but we have another student, too. So, yeah, we want to make sure we have time for Madison.
I think the caller who mentioned the workplace is on to something. It's important that we incentivize for students a reason why the phone needs to be put away, a reason why I need to look at you and interact with you in a civil manner. And one thing schools can do is connect young people, classrooms, and teachers to the world of work outside the school. We do that in lots of ways at Randolph Union, whether it's our senior project and the mentors kids have to have, or our deployed classrooms where kids work twice a week on the floor of GW Plastics. So they hear from other adults why they need to behave and act in a certain way. Just like Bella was saying, if you interact with a different generation, you typically behave better. So let's mix things up in schools in ways that incentivize good behavior. And that has to do with who we're with, how we teach, and what we teach. The content of the curriculum can be relevant and engaging enough to be worth the good behavior. And so that's where curriculum relevancy comes into the picture. And that connects back to what Mark was saying about the root causes being outside school. Yes. And the one way that schools can affect those root causes is by educating young citizens who have the knowledge and the awareness and the dispositions to be active citizens in their democracy, making their society a better place. Again, that gets back to what we teach. So what we teach and how we teach it, what our discussions norms are, what the manners are that we expect in the classroom. All of that has a role in helping young people manage their behaviors and feel empowered and feel like they are worth it.
Let's get Madison to Joinville in here with us now, because we've been talking, again, about students, about schools, about student behavior. We heard earlier from 7th grader Bella Wozniak. Madison de Joinville is an 11th grader at Randolph Union High School. Hi, Madison. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to this whole conversation, too, and you know, I'm curious about what you're hearing from all the adults having this conversation about you and your friends and your classmates.
Well, I certainly agree with a lot of what they're saying, definitely the whole social media piece and the swearing, how it's all related to, like, the environment that you're in and who you're around. Definitely people are a tad bit more respectful when they're around people of a different generation, which I think they should be more considerate about with their peers, because there is a lot of provocative language, and with the inappropriate t-shirts, there are some of that. And I think a lot of it does have to do with home life and who you're spending time with.
Madison, do you think students respect their teachers in school?
I feel like the newer teachers get disrespected more often. I have seen it in our school where some of the teachers are just, the students do not listen to them, and they just talk over them. But definitely if you are a teacher that has been teaching for several years, kids start to respect you more.
What do you think the pressures are on you and your friends and your classmates that make life challenging and school challenging that you wish teachers and administrators and parents had a better understanding of?
I feel like in Randolph Union, we have the teachers and our parents have a good idea of what we're learning and like how we're learning it. And I think that for students, it's just a matter of, do they think that I'm doing good? Do I think I'm doing good? Can I do better?
This idea of resiliency, do you think that's something, a skill that needs to be taught?
I feel like it should be incorporated, but not the main focus of what could be changed.
Madison DeJoinville is an 11th grader at Randolph Union High School. Madison, again, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and sharing your perspective.
Well, thank you.
So we just have a minute or two left, but as we have this conversation, Jerry and Elijah, and we look at what's happening in schools, and you've talked a little bit about some of the skills that you're working on, but issues like social media, bullying on social media, which certainly adults engage in, and societal issues, generational poverty, opiate addiction. Everybody's trying to bend the curve on all of those bad things, but until and unless we get there, is this just going to be a perpetual and increasing problem in schools? Or do you really see, these efforts that you're making having an impact on students' lives as they graduate and go on into the workforce?
I think it will be a perpetual and increasing problem. I don't see us heading in a beautiful direction in terms of the traumas that our young people in our world and are going to endure. But there are things you can do. Our graduation rate at Randolph Union has gone from in the 70s and 80s percentage to over 90%. And that in part has to do with engaging curriculum, relationship building through advisory and other structures, and a huge attention to not giving up on any child. And meanwhile, kids are still getting into the University of Chicago and Columbia, so you don't have to sacrifice rigor for relationships. And I think if schools can keep that in mind, build strong connections to the other adults that are in the community, there's plenty of hope for what schools can do for our democracy and for any individual kid.
Jerry, I know that you're a counselor, but I'd love to hear what you think, how other teachers can be supported, how people who are working in schools who are also dealing with all of this can feel buoyed and supported and respected.
I'm trying not to be too simple in my answer, Jane, but a lot of it's honestly about hard work. And I think in our school, what we're trying to do is have a systemic approach to supporting kids and working very hard to connect with our kids, understand them, and, as Elijah said, project them out to the future. We're thinking about what kind of skills and what are the things we need to support you in so you can be successful when you leave our school.
Well, ongoing conversation. I really appreciate both of you being a part of it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jane.
Jerry Castles is Director of Guidance at Northfield Middle and High School. Elijah Hawks is co-principal at Randolph Union Middle and High Schools.